Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Train Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, and I'm joined today once again by Terence Corrigan. Terence, how are you doing?
I'm good, Nick, and yourself?
Not too bad, not too bad. Ooh, well, as I say that. And also Mr. Maurice Ruitt from the East Rand. Maurice, how are things in sunny Benoni?
It's Edenvale, but it's a bit cold. Sunny, but it's cold.
Yes, I'm not enjoying this weather too much, but I think it is going to begin warming up over the next few days. So, good stuff.
Right. We will resolve. We will overcome this weather.
Yes. there's been an interesting new development in the great story of the insurrection, or so it has been deemed by President Ramaphosa. The Patriotic Alliance, which is a small opposition party that's mostly active in South Africa's coloured areas, who recently captured some wards in Johannesburg from the DA. And they were founded by formerly convicted bank robber Gayton McKenzie. Their mayoral candidate for the West Rand, Bruce Nimmerhout, has been charged under the Terrorism Act after he was arrested for allegedly inciting violence during the recent civil unrest. He was charged with a Schedule 5 offense, which means that in order to make bail, he needed to show that it was in the interest of justice to permit his release on bail, and the bail judgment is going to be handed down on Friday. It's alleged that he circulated a WhatsApp voice note, which I think was allegedly of his voice, inciting public violence and calling people to block national highways. He says that he had received the voice note the night before he was arrested from a PA WhatsApp group with about 95 members, and he had intended to share it with local police as it incited violence, but was arrested before he got the chance. He said that he was in fact involved in protecting communities and mobilizing community members to protect shops. He said that he has openly been speaking out against these acts of violence. The police haven't confirmed who they think the person in the voice note is inciting violence. And Nimmerhout has gone on to say that he thinks that this is political sabotage and someone trying to implicate and frame him. So Terence, let me start with you. Right. Should someone be charged with terrorism? And do you think this case sounds like it has much merit to it? I'm not so sure.
Everybody in this country has aspirations that reach, you know, beyond the heights of Mount Everest, and a moral conscience that is an example to every one of your fellow citizens. Yes, you know, of course, everyone was out there defending those shopping centers, and we were just waiting to turn in the evidence of wrongdoing to the authorities. The authorities were on the way to stop the looting as it happens. It's very strange that South Africa ends up in the mess as it does, with the caliber of people we have representing us and piloting this country into the future. It seems to me he probably didn't do anything worse than what was being done by people with a great deal more public profile than he. Some of whom have been known to take parliamentary benches. Some of whom are related to former presidents of this great republic. One thing that you can always count on with our political class is the ducking and diving and evasion of responsibility. It was never me. That being said, I do think that what we are witnessing is an attempt by the authorities to swing this insurrection narrative. Part of that, I think, is that you know people aren't just going to be charged with incitement and whatever. You know, it's going to be terrorism. It's going to be the political charges. That, for better or worse, though, lends itself to the political defense. to say, no, well, actually, you know, I was exercising my leadership and I single-handedly held back the galloping hordes that were approaching. There is something profoundly dysfunctional about our political culture and about our political institutions. I think we greet this sort of event with profound cynicism.
Yeah, I think that's about right. It feels a lot like he's a bit of a scapegoat here. And as Terence pointed out, you know, we've had some of the Zuma children on social media saying things that I think were far more inflammatory than, you know, the maybe odd 100 odd people or something who listened to this voice note. And they don't appear to be charged with anything. I think the DA laid charges against them, but the government doesn't seem to have taken much action against them. Maurice, what do you make of the idea that this guy is a scapegoat? I mean, the PA is not a huge national organization with millions and millions of followers. I think it got like less than 0.5% of the votes in the last election.
Yeah, I don't think it even got into parliament in the last election. So it'd been even less than half a percent. But I think this guy's definitely a scapegoat to keep this insurrection narrative going. The issue that there are these 12 masterminds behind this thing. But who are they? Nobody's been arrested. You'd think if there were 12 people who are trying to overthrow the
republic. Isn't he one?
Yeah, he's one of them. I mean, so it's one guy and he's just some random...
We've got like 8.5% of them or something. So
exactly. I mean, but he's some random minor politician from the West Rand. You know, I don't really think he's behind this insurrection. And it's obviously, even if he did say the things that he's been accused of, was obviously just opportunistic and what have you. And the fact that somebody like Duduzile Zuma hasn't been charged or arrested yet just shows you exactly what's going on, because her tweets are there for everybody to see. She was inciting all this violence. She was encouraging it as well. So the fact that nothing's happening to her tells you that this fellow, I can't remember his name now. I mean, I don't know. I can't remember, like, he's not even well enough to... Bruce Nimmerhout. I mean... You can see he's obviously getting thrown to the wolves to just show, oh, look, this is this, you know, mastermind behind all this kind of stuff. You know, he's the guy who set the Reichstag on fire, you know.
So for our listeners, I'm sure most of them know the story, but of course the Nazis managed to assume control over Germany after there was this fire in the Reichstag, which was the German parliament. And this was used to suggest that there was about to be a communist coup to overthrow the coalition government, which the Nazis were part of. Although I believe that actually historians have since determined that almost certainly it was actually just one lone guy who was disgruntled with the government and set fire to the Reichstag.
And Perry's been mentioning all guys.
Yeah, for years it was thought that this was a false flag operation and that the Nazis had done it to themselves to justify their own takeover. And quite interestingly, a lot of historians seem to think that that's not actually the case anymore. Yeah, and I think that's quite telling about how just individual actors causing, you know, with an axe to grind can cause an enormous amount of damage to a country, because, of course, terrible things happened in the aftermath of that. Anyway, yeah, so, Maurice, what do you make of this charge of terrorism? I can't think of people who have been charged with terrorism since, I think, the Burmark trial.
But I'm not sure about the legalities, but surely just encourage it. This would be maybe be incitement or something like that. Surely terrorism requires an act of actually damaging infrastructure or planning, actually, you know, going to plant a bomb or whatever the case is, you know, to attack infrastructure or attack civilians or whatever. This, I mean, as I said, I don't know the legalities about all this, but I really can't see it as being terrorism. It confuses me a bit.
So there's an interesting part of the story as well, which is the police captain, Pakamile Gumede, who is responsible for opposing bail of Bruce Nimmerhout, said in court, if the accused was not arrested, nobody knows what would have happened on the 16th of that month. They, the community, won't be happy if Nimmerhout is granted bail because of what has been happening in the country with the looting. There is no community that is happy about it, so people who want peace won't be happy about that. The arrest of the accused managed to defuse the situation. Yeah,
you know, aren't we in good hands? Aren't we in good hands?
Yeah, that's not the strongest.
We got Doctor No and Doctor Strangelove rolled into one there. I mean,
Yeah, I don't like this. What really concerns me about this is the policeman is basically saying the community who are left undefined won't be happy if he's granted bail. Mm. This does not seem like a particularly strong reason to oppose bail.
Exactly.
I've written about that myself. The community, the majority, you know, these vague phrases that incorporate everyone in general and no one in particular. You know, there's no cell phone number you can phone to ask, you know, are you as the community in favor of this? It's this broad perception floating as another great South Africanism out there.
Yeah, really? That's about right.
You know.
Anyway,
the people out there, you know, as opposed to the people in here.
I strongly suspect that he's going to get off on these charges because this really, based on what the media reporting has brought out so far, it really doesn't seem particularly strong.
No, I agree. But as you also mentioned, it'd be interesting if, depending what happens in the local government elections, if we do have them, maybe Mr. Namoit could find himself being a kingmaker on the West Rand municipality. Who knows?
Yes, the PA, if it manages to capture a seat or two in the West Rand, very well could end up being senior partners or junior partners in a coalition government in the West Rand, because the ANC, as we know, might take a battering in the local government elections, assuming they're even held.
Assuming we have them, yes.
Yeah, please see yesterday's episode for more about that.
Yeah. Please see terms and conditions apply to democracy in South Africa.
Yes. All right, so let's move on to our next topic. Terrence, you were struck by the president's letter. So every week the president writes a letter called from the desk of the president, and you had some thoughts on his most recent ideas.
Yeah, well, given recent events in this country, the term struck by, has certain implications that we might want to just avoid. It's very interesting because I think this is in a sense just an extension of what we were talking about. The president in his weekly missive to his family, to the country as a whole, was saying that, vigilantism will not be tolerated. It's absolutely dreadful. These racial tensions that have arisen. True enough, as far as it goes, but I think there's two things to be pointed out here. In as much as I think that our political culture and our political institutions, you know, have been invaded by severe pathologies, I think that one of the most obvious expressions of this is the dysfunctionality of the state. Now, the president can sternly go behind his lectern or his keyboard and wag his finger at the rest of us, you know, P.W. Huerta style. We will not tolerate this. You know, I seem to remember P.W. saying, "I'm going to keep order in this country, and nobody is going to stop me." You may or may not tolerate it, but do you have any capacity to enforce it? We were not going to tolerate looting. we're not going to tolerate land invasions, you know, until they happen, and then we sort of turn around with this, like, what the hell happened, look in our face. We are not going to tolerate a culture of lawlessness. We are not going to tolerate corruption. That's a good one. If the state, and this is the state of the state in South Africa, if the state is unable to provide people with protection, then unfortunately, vigilantism steps in to fill that void. I'm not saying that this is a good thing. In fact, I think it's a profoundly, profoundly dangerous thing. People will look to their own immediate survival before deciding whether the loss of your possessions and a couple of expendable loved ones is a price worth paying, you know, to allow the state space to do its work. As far as the racial and ethnic tensions go, this is a phenomenon, I think, throughout history, throughout the world, where you have stresses that arise because of deprivation, because people are desperate. You know, they will they will tend to cluster in, you know, together in whatever groupings give them some sort of perception of security. And let's not forget that that the president's party, and at times the president himself, have not been averse to playing this dirty little game. You know, if we remember when the Black Lives Matter protest began in the United States, he went on television and you know, rocked that race card quite powerfully in front of the country. Even as the security forces over which he presides were racking up a body count that would make Derek Chauvin seem quite envious.
Yeah, no.
I look at this with a sense of bemusement, a sort of detachment from reality, and a Pontius Pilate like washing of hands of responsibility.
I think that's exactly right. I must say that even by the fairly low standards that Ramaphosa has exhibited so far, his handling of this whole crisis has been quite awful. He yes. just disappeared at first. I don't know if everyone remembers, but he just suddenly went and vanished into the ether in the midst of the carnage. And then he emerged to give a sort of somber speech and put out all the platitudes and the cliches like we will not tolerate this and we will not tolerate that, and thanking all the interest groups. And when he actually went on the ground to visit KZN and some of the places that have been hit by violence, he interestingly, of course, did not go to Phoenix, which was the center of a lot of the, I think, the worst stuff that's gone on, and possibly some of the racial tension that may have happened. Morris, your thoughts on what Terrence and I have been saying?
Yeah, I think the president also, I think he mischaracterized this. Nobody wants to go form a citizens militia to protect their property and their family from, you know, nefarious elements. Most people want to be in bed by 9 or 10 o'clock after watching Netflix and, you know, be sleeping or whatever, so, and having the police protect them. This emergence of these vigilantes and so on it's just a symptom of a failing state. That's exactly what it is. And it's actually, I mean, the president shouldn't be criticizing people who have formed these groups. Obviously, I mean, you can't condone if, you know, if there's been violence against you know, innocent people or whatever, but you also can't criticize people who want to protect their homes and their properties. And from what I've seen, there hasn't really been a racial element to it. From what I've seen, black, white, and Indian people in Natal standing together to protect their property and their families from looters and so on. So, and it's also, I've also seen on social media a lot of people criticizing these vigilantes, but it's also easy to criticize a vigilante when you're sitting in your Santon security estate with 24-hour armed guards.
Are you telling me that people on social media were criticizing other people?
Yeah, it's crazy. I can't believe it. And Twitter's normally such a nice, you know, like people just calling people on their looks and talk about unicorns and butterflies and, you know, and whatever. So, but as usual, I mean, the president, he just, I mean, also, you also want to know who's advising the president. I mean, like these newsletters that come from always seem to be like, they don't seem to be addressing the issues of the day. I mean, it should be, how are we going to get people employed and stuff? You know, like, having vigilantes protect their properties is the least of our problems at the moment. And they wouldn't have to do that if we were in a country where over 40% of people weren't unemployed. If South Africa had an unemployment rate of 10%, none of what happened 2 or 3 weeks ago would have happened. I mean, it's pretty obvious. Mm. But, you know, it's also, I mean, it's easy to sit here and say we need more people to be employed. But, I mean, that is what needs to happen. And I've said it before, every single government policy in South Africa, the only it should be looked at and says, how will this create jobs? If it's not going to create jobs, throw in the dustbin. If it's going to the every single government policy, the only result from it should be the creation of jobs.
Well, you know, Nicholas, carry on.
No, go ahead.
Well, look, in his miss of the president also spent a paragraph or two discussing wonderful plans for rebuilding and support for small businesses or whatever. You know, I shake my head. You know, where have I heard this before? Oh, since the 1980s. You know, this, you know, you don't have to go back to the Reconstruction and Development Program. You can go back to just say Edler, President Pierre Buerta. you know, we are going to, you know, create small businesses to provide goods and services. Die verschaffing van goederen en diensten. Well, you know, it's the same record again and again and again. But we want all these small businesses to flourish. But you know, they must be, you know, done according to demographic formula. They must be registered. They must be paying tax. They must adhere to, you know, prescribed labor standards, etc., etc., etc. And you know, after they've done that, you know, we'll be very happy to see this flourishing of entrepreneurship across the country.
Yes. I'm often shocked actually by the level of continuity between the National Party in the 80s and the ANC of today, especially. Just, you know, in everything from the sort of the rhetoric to the themes to even some of the policy ideas. But I have a hot, untested theory, if you guys are willing to indulge me for a second. Do you think that the Ramaphosa media people very deliberately chose the word insurrection in how to refer to this incident? So they could have used a whole bunch of things, uprising, rebellion, all sorts of stuff like that, but they chose insurrection. Mm. And here's my theory. When was the last time that we heard insurrection being thrown about and becoming a widely used media word? I think it was, of course, when January 6th, Donald Trump's supporters went to the Capitol and stormed the Capitol building. Mm. And that was
called. And that was as much of an insurrection as what happened in the last 2 weeks.
So I think that they've deliberately chose that because they know that a lot of the people in the sort of media and the intelligentsia space will make that subconscious link between this and that, and then they'll very much come on side, or make it easier for them to come on side behind Ramaphosa. What do you guys think of that?
Yeah, I agree with that, I think. And as I say, both of them were none of them were insurrections either. I mean, what happened over the last 2 weeks was, you know, I think just the South Africa reaching boiling point with, you know, as I just said, over 40% of the population being unemployed, for a lot of people that don't see any way out, you know, they kind of feel hopeless and, you know, despairing and whatever. And I mean, those guys who attacked the Capitol, it was just a bunch of, you know, the rednecks who'd been on Facebook too much. You know, there was no real threat, I think, of the American government being overthrown. Even if they got in there and torn up the electoral college ballots or whatever, they would have made it, they would have suddenly become the legal government of the United States. I mean, it was ridiculous. And, you know, to call it, to act as if it were, I mean, people have been saying it was the biggest threat to the United States since the Civil War, which is, of course, I mean, it's a load of rubbish, you know. So, but I think you're right, Nick. I mean, if you link those two events, and also, I think it's also, if you call it an insurrection, you make those guys who did attack the Capitol seem a bit more threatening than they actually were. I mean, they were, if you just look at them, they're all a bunch of fools, really, a lot of them who'd just, you know, been on the internet too much and bought all this QAnon stuff. I mean, there was that QAnon shaman, for example, you know, who was actually an actor, who was actually a vegan actor, apparently, you know. So, I mean, he believed all that stuff.
I believe he's been diagnosed with several different mental illnesses, including
schizophrenia. Exactly.
He's now seeking to have the charges against
him. But like we said, Alex Jones was actually trying to calm down the situation. You know, it's Alex Jones is on the side of the side that wants to keep things calm. And then you know who's on the other side.
Yeah, no, that's quite weird. Anyway, just one last thought from one of our commenters here. He says, in his letter this week, the president also said, we returned our ports to full operational capacity. Meanwhile, Transnet has just declared force majeure because of a hack. And that's probably a story we'll talk about tomorrow, because that's also just crazy. And it connects to this, you know, the wildness that's going on in the world with all these hacking attempts, and how South Africa, I think, is uniquely unprepared for that, considering our government does not have a very positive relationship with technology. If you've ever tried to use a government website before, you'll know.
They still use Flash on offering.
Yeah, or you log into the website and it says, warning, compatible with Internet Explorer 5.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. Okay, let us go to our final topic for today, which is, of course, coming from that bastion of something.
Free thought.
UCT, where the administration of UCT invited Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, who's a Nigerian feminist, to give a lecture, an open lecture at the university. However, this has drawn fierce criticism from the student rights the student representative council at UCT, who says that the lecture must be cancelled because Chimamanda is in fact a transphobe and a bigot. They refer to a interview that she gave where she was asked, are trans women women? And she replied, are trans women, rather than real women, which is the answer that they were looking for, the SRC. They say that in a later clarification, she said that trans women are not women. The university has defended, which is, I think, the first time I've heard UCT in a very long time defend someone, that she is known for her LGBTQIA plus rights advocacy in Nigeria. While her advocacy has been controversial, it has to be understood in the full complexity of its context. Furthermore, she has been unequivocal in stating, I have and will continue to stand up for the rights of transgender people. As a university, we must fully embrace the most difficult and challenging conversations. We should only deny people a platform when grounds for doing so are unequivocal. This is clearly not the case here. Yeah, so as one of our commenters here says, she's been accused of being a TERF, which means trans-exclusionary radical feminist, which is a very overused term in certain online spaces. Marius, this is a bit strange. Seems like they're going quite far to, even if, you know, you think that what she said is wrong, which
but even,
I think is a bit crazy. But five years ago, for her deplatforming.
But if she'd said this 5 years ago, that would have been pretty, you know, everybody's like, oh, that's, yeah, she's right. That would have been the progressive thing to actually say now. But now for a lot of these people, I mean, but we also have to say the really radical trans rights activists are people on the fringe, in my opinion. Most trans people, I think, just want to get on with their lives. They don't want to, you know, go deplatform people and whatever the case is. But this Nigerian writer, she actually afterwards she wrote an essay complaining, well, not complaining, but calling out the kind of you know, the internet culture we have these days. She said, there are many social media savvy people who are choking on sanctimony and lacking compassion. People who wield the words violence and weaponize, like tarnished pitchforks, which I think is very interesting because this Adichie lady's, she's quite woke, but she's not orthodoxy.
She advocates for gay rights in a country where I think that's very important because exactly. Nigeria is not exactly super friendly to gay
people. Where there's real threats to gay people in Nigeria. I mean, I don't know the details, but I would be very surprised if being gay is legal in Nigeria. But also then somebody she'd actually worked with before, another Nigerian writer called Akwaeke Emezi, who's non-binary, which for people not to be aware means they're not man or woman. But anyway, she actually tweeted at Adichie, I trust that there are other people who will pick up machetes to protect us from the harm transphobes like Adichie and Rowling, J.K. Rowling, seek to perpetuate. I, however, will be in my garden of the butterflies, trying to figure out how to befriend the neighborhood crows. And it's also this very clever way, like saying, I'm not calling for violence, but if something terrible happens to these people, then, you know, oh, well, then it happened. You know, it's this very clever play with words that these people do. And it's the same kind of people will say that words are violence and call for actual violence to be done against other people.
Yeah, that's crazy. Just to confirm, homosexual relationships are illegal in Nigeria since 1901, when Nigeria was still a protectorate. Terence, your thoughts to close off?
Well, I must say, I do find it interesting that UCT says her positions are controversial. Is that controversial in the UC Berkeley scheme of things, or in the Port Harcourt scheme of things, or in the Sharia-dominated northern Nigeria? You know, these are I think for an institution that prides itself on its intellectualism, there is a distressing suggestion of an embracing of boundless diversity, aside from when it comes to thinking. Now, our intrepid SRC at UCT said that the curriculum at the university actively promotes intersexual feminism through its curriculum. That seems a tad like indoctrination rather than debate to me, rather than intellectual inquiry. I am glad that that UCT seems to have found some at least kind of droopy lead in its pencil this time, because I remember when Fleming Rose, the guy who actually did suffer death threats and had to relocate because of stuff that he had written, came to or that he had been involved in, came to give a lecture in South Africa. It was, this might actually retard academic freedom, you know, if we have to listen to these dreadful ideas about, you know, open societies and things like that.
How horrible.
Lock up your children. J.K. Rowling's on the loose. So.
No, apparently. Anyway, that is all the time we have for today. I see someone is asking about our thoughts on France. I don't have any really at the moment, except that France is and continues to be sort of strangely first world basket case. But anyway, we'll talk about that, I'm sure, soon in more detail. I hope you all have a wonderful day, and we'll see you tomorrow on the Daily French Show. Cheers, everyone.